Hello and welcome to another episode of What's My Age Again? I'm Catherine Ryan, and my guest today is my damn self. It's TV's Catherine Ryan, formerly of television, now of podcasts. Today's the day I find out my own biological age and how it compares to my chronological age that I've been telling people. I've asked all my guests to take a biological age test. I thought it's only fair if I do it myself. I'm 41 today, but how old is my incredible body? I'm not alone on this episode. Our resident scientist, Dr. Nicola Conlon, is here to interrogate my lifestyle. And I'm also joined by Chris Wincup, a consultant rheumatologist specializing in lupus at King's College Hospital in London. Uh-oh, that can't be good. Nobody else's result has required the need for a specialist to attend at the top of the episode. Dr. Chris, what the hell?
Hi.
You're such a red flag. I don't even know my results yet. And we've brought in a specialist. That just feels, it's going to be pretty bad, isn't it?
Don't panic.
Don't worry, Chris.
I'm not here.
I will not pretend you're not here. I'm actually very excited to have you because, of course, I have spoken about before. I have autoimmune disease. I have lupus, systemic lupus, which is like the worst one. And I have celiac, and autoimmune diseases often stack. Members of my family have lots of autoimmune diseases, and I know that causes inflammation, and I also know that glycanage really looks out for inflammation. So I'm just going to, I think, do an opposite format today and reveal my biological age at the top of the episode. Why, you know, fan the flames of fake Jeopardy? We can all see what's going on. Catherine Ryan, oh, my result is 77 years old, and that is 36 years older than my chronological age. That's actually not as bad as I thought it would be. Straight off the bat, my reaction, guys, I feel validated. I've been trying to tell people that I'm tired. I really identify with like the golden girls and older gay icon type women. So this is fine for me. But I think it is, Chris, the highest result we've had on the show. So my chronological age is 41. Why did I do so badly if I look so hot?
It's a difficult question. And I think it's something that I think about a lot because I'm nearly 40 as well. So I'm thinking about my chronological age.
All right, Chris, I'm 77. So like, let me break out the world's smallest violin for you.
I've not done my test though. So I mean, okay. I don't know what my age is as well. But I think there are probably some things that we could use to perhaps suggest why this might be. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned autoimmunity.
Yeah.
And that you have lupus. So lupus is a disease that we really don't know much about. And we don't really know the effects on the immune system and particularly the immune system's age. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly likely to be something that's contributing to the results that you've got.
So you're a lupus specialist. What do you know about lupus?
So, I always feel like a bit of a fraud when talking about lupus because there's a lot that we don't know. But what we do know mm-hmm. is that lupus is what we call a chronic systemic autoimmune condition. So chronic, fairly obvious, hangs around, doesn't go away. Systemic, it doesn't just involve one part of the body. So it's not like just your joints or just kidneys or just skin. It can affect everywhere. And autoimmune, as you mentioned, autoimmune conditions are really quite common. We've got an immune system that is made up of various white blood cells that is incredibly complex and very well designed to protect you from things like infection. Mm-hmm. So all the time your immune system is doing something to protect you. And for reasons we're not completely sure of in conditions like lupus and other autoimmune problems, the immune system gets confused. And instead of going after bugs that are invading the body, it attacks the body's otherwise healthy tissue.
Yeah.
And in lupus, it can affect huge different parts of the body. So the skin, it can affect the joints, can affect the blood, the kidneys, the brain, you name it. Lupus mm-hmm. can affect various different areas. And that inflammation within the body is probably something that's contributing to the results that you've seen with this immune aging test.
Okay, so lupus causes a lot of inflammation mm-hmm. for people, and so they will do badly on the test. And also a lot of people with lupus that you see in your work, are they very, very sick?
Yeah, so lupus is a spectrum.
Yeah.
So we know that there are certain things that put people at higher risk. So for example, if you're diagnosed when you're very young, so for example, if you're diagnosed as a child or a teenager.
Kids have lupus.
Yeah.
What's the youngest person you've seen with lupus?
12, I think. So yeah, 12 is probably the youngest.
It was a girl, wasn't it?
It was. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing is that 90% of people with lupus are female. So it's a very, very unfair disease.
And aren't they also Hispanic?
Yeah. So again, when we
think... Lupus is like the Donald Trump of autoimmune disease. It goes for Hispanic women.
It's very discriminatory.
Oh.
But why? Why is a good question? Yeah. And we think that there must be something about hormones involved in it because 90% of patients are female. We know that it isn't often seen before people hit puberty. And actually, interestingly, as people reach the menopause, the symptoms of lupus tend to settle down. Okay. So we think there's probably an estrogen component to it. But that doesn't explain why 10% of patients are men. So there's still a lot we need to work out. But we think there probably is this hormonal element to it as well.
I have read, Chris, with autoimmune disease is that it can be linked to repressed trauma, to being a firstborn daughter, to being very resilient. And then internally, your body is reacting. And I know that maybe medicine doesn't look at the holistic picture like that. What are your views on trauma contributing to autoimmune disease?
So there has been some data on trauma, but I think that more broadly speaking, stress is a really important thing. So we know that stress has a role in the immune system. We also know that we mentioned many young people with autoimmune conditions. We often see it flare up around exam times. And that's not because people are trying to get out of their exams. It's because genuinely stress is doing something to their immune system. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that. And I think people living with autoimmune conditions, it's good to acknowledge that stress can impact. So yeah, I think stress and trauma are really interesting and there needs to be a lot more work in that area. But it's definitely something that people do anecdotally tell us all the time.
Yeah, because I am not actually sick with lupus. Mm. It shows up in my blood. So if I'll do the glycan test for Dr. Nicola, obviously it shows up. I'm 77. It's showed up in other blood tests. Mm. You know, I've had miscarriages and that's the only time they've really looked into autoantibodies and things like that. But day to day, I don't have any fevers. I don't have any joint pain. Mm. I don't feel sick. I am generally like tired, but I think that's because I have small children. Are there people that you see who are just not sick?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few. And like I mentioned, it's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. I think perhaps, obviously, things are slightly biased. When I'm in clinic, I see lots of people who are quite sick because they're coming to clinic. And perhaps the people who feel better maybe don't come so often. Mm-hmm. But on that spectrum, you do have people who medically we think are not sick.
Yeah.
But you mentioned fatigue, and we know fatigue is a massive problem for people with lupus, even when lupus is well controlled. So actually, as doctors, we're really worried about people's kidneys and their joints and their skin. But you ask people with lupus, what's your worst symptom? And 90% say fatigue is their worst symptom.
Dr. Nicola, should I have even taken this test with lupus? What's the point?
Well,
I'm just going to fail.
For some people, this is a highlight to a condition they never knew they had. You know, we've had some people that have taken the test and it's come back really high. And, you know, obviously, for the purpose of this podcast, we're looking at an age, we're looking at a number. Yeah. But really behind it, we're looking at patterns of a lot of different glycans. Glycans are what this test measures, and different patterns are like a signature for lupus. So for some people, it's like, oh my goodness, why is my test so high? And you can literally see they have like an inflammatory signature that suggests something like lupus or celiac or some other type of autoimmune. So for some people, it's like a warning to something they didn't realize that was going on underneath the surface.
Yeah.
Where they can then go, okay, maybe I need to address this. Maybe I need to look into it a bit more. But as you mentioned, this is measuring inflammation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we did your test, we kind of knew that this was going to come back high with the lupus because it's inflammation. And that is exactly what this type of biological age test is measuring. Okay. And it would be really interesting to look at different types of biological age tests with you because this is just one type. This is just like inflammation is one part of aging. Mm-hmm. It's not the full, you know, everything that is driving aging in the body. So there's lots of other different things. So it'd be really interesting to look at some other types of age tests that look at like epigenetics and your DNA and the rate of aging there.
Bone density.
Yeah, a lot of other things.
Mm. And my skin just won't quit. You know, it's luminescent.
This is it though, but you are feeling well.
I know.
And this is the most important factor. And I think, as like you said, as scientists and doctors, we're very hung up on biomarkers and levels and tests. But if you feel well.
Well, maybe I don't. Maybe I just have like a high output. Because I don't think I'm that tired. I work more than most people. And I have these kids. It just won't leave. I don't know. Like people in my family don't necessarily die super young.
Your lifestyle, I was looking at your questionnaire. Okay. So your lifestyle is actually really good. You know, you have a good diet. You don't eat much processed food. You say you're not stressed.
Because I'm allergic to all the processed food, because it's celiac.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. See, so there's no processed food in your diet really because of that. But that is a good thing. You know, the more processed food generally, the more inflammatory we are, just, you know, with anyone, whether they've got celiac lupus or not. But, you know, you have low levels of stress. The only thing is, I know that you are self-confessed avoidant of all exercise. Yeah. I've definitely learned that about you. So that would be one area. And I'd be really interested with Chris's, you know, your perspective on this, because exercise, as you know, with some of the other guests, we promote exercise. It reduces biological age. Yeah. But then there's always a level of where too much exercise, again, as we've seen, can be pro-inflammatory. So is Catherine doing the right or wrong thing by not doing any exercise? And that, having said that, you're an active person, so it's not like you're sitting doing nothing, but you
some
don't
days I don't
but you don't actively like go for a run or go to the gym.
No, because I think being in any close proximity to the Lycra dads, you know, on a Sunday, that would make me feel sad and
it's
stressed.
An allergy.
It would be an inflammatory response straight away. You know what I mean? I don't want to be part of that gang, Chris.
Noted.
And I'm sure a lot of your patients, if they come to you with joint problems or fatigue, they're probably not exercising a lot. And do you tell them, oh, go out and exercise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is you can get that wrong. Mm-hmm. So the fatigue I mentioned was a major issue, and there's no real medicine that we have that makes that better. But the one study that showed an improvement in fatigue was when people did exercise. And so when I was much, much more junior, I used to say to people, hey, why don't you go and do some exercise? Which, number one, is really insensitive if that person's got a lot of fatigue and a lot of pain to just say, go and do some exercise. Mm-hmm. But number two, I wasn't quantifying what I meant by exercise. And when I think of exercise, I kind of think, oh, maybe you like go to the gym and you run on a treadmill for half an hour. And I think a lot of people think that. And I think if you're not doing exercise and suddenly your doctor's saying, go and do some exercise, you go and run for half an hour on a treadmill, you're going to feel a lot worse than before you did that. Yeah. And exercise can be really small things. So, for example, Pilates for 10 minutes a day, just doing really gentle things is a good start. And I think you also mentioned bone strength earlier on. And we know that in lupus, many of the drugs we use, like steroids, can make people's bones get thinner over time. And bones get stronger with exercise. But like you were saying, it doesn't need to be huge amounts of exercise, but anything that's weight bearing. So being on your feet, walking around, all those kind of things will help improve your bone strength.
Well,
which
I am.
Is really important.
Yeah, I'm always on my feet. I'll bring in the Ocado shop, you know, the door. I also have like 54 stairs in my house and I walk up and down those with two toddlers, one on each hip. You know, I do things and I'm on stage for 2 hours moving around. I don't know if that is cardio. I have been known to drop it like it's hot on the dance floor. I'm active. I live in London.
Yeah.
So I take public transit and I'll be going up the stairs and things. I'm not fat. There's a lot more cardio involved with being on tour.
Yeah.
Then, you know, just because I'm not singing like Taylor Swift, I know, sang her whole album on a treadmill to prepare for shows. I'm not dancing. I could add an element of dance to the show. I think that would be appreciated.
Well, maybe there you go. Some dance classes. One thing I would like to ask you about is sleep. So how do you sleep?
Badly.
Yeah, because in your questionnaire, you had one of the lowest scores on sleep. Yeah. You were one of the only people that had less than 6 hours. Mm-hmm. Now, is that, I mean, it's obviously you've got two young kids. So is it because of kids, or do you generally sleep badly anyway?
No, that's environmental. Like, I would sleep if they weren't around.
Yeah, okay.
But it is getting better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think I'm in a season of life where my inflammation, especially on the test, was a little bit higher than it should have been. Like, I've had 5 pregnancies in the last 5 years. 2 of those pregnancies have resulted in babies. 3 of those, partially due to autoimmune disease, have been miscarriages. Right before the test, I lost a pregnancy at like 9.5 weeks and I had to have surgery for that. That, I'm not usually stressed. That did stress me out for some reason.
Okay.
Because I was on tour and filming, so I got really stressed about that for some reason.
That's really interesting. And thank you for sharing that.
I overshare. It's a problem that I have.
Well, that would be interesting because obviously with any autoimmune disease, you get flare-ups.
Yeah.
And any sort of big physiological change in the body, especially to do with hormones, pregnancy, or anything like that, can really flare up conditions.
Yeah.
And this, as we know, is something that changes. You know, biological age, the way we measure it can go up and down. It would be really interesting to actually re-measure, because if you were in a phase of flare-up, I wouldn't be surprised. Again, given how well you feel, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, looking at it again, when you're not going through a stressful period, a period where you have had, you know, a trauma to the body. It would be very interesting.
Yeah, like 6 weeks maybe after the surgery, or 5 weeks.
And that would be, we say around 3 months is the turnover of glycans in the body is around every 3 months. So that would still be very influential in that measurement that we did at that point in time.
Dr. Chris, what are your views on breast implants generally? And then also as something that causes autoimmune disease and inflammation?
Well, it's a really interesting question, because there is some data to say that people who live close to silica mines, where you get silica, are at increased risk of autoimmunity. I like to be quite thorough when I'm seeing people in clinic, but that's a question that I often forget to ask. So I think we probably underappreciate that. I'm not sure in autoimmunity. We've not seen, I think, an increase in autoimmune diseases. We see an increase in implants. So
yeah,
the link is possibly not there, but who knows?
Because there is something called breast implant illness that is a separate autoimmune response that's not defined as lupus. But every once in a while, when I do speak about autoimmune disease, I get messages from people who go, you have breast implant illness. I don't, because I had autoimmune disease before I had breast implants. But it could be, maybe it would lower my inflammation if I got them out.
Yeah.
And not get them out, you know, like for free things.
So this is an area with a lot more research now. This is something where there really was no research, but there are more and more papers and tests and trials being looking into this breast implant illness. So, and it is an inflammatory response, you know, to something in the body that, you know, once upon a time we didn't think caused any immune response, but now as more people have had them in their bodies for longer, we're now realizing that they're not completely inert. And in some people, especially people that are more prone to having a sort of an immune reaction in the first place, their immune system is more switched on. Having anything in the body that is not meant to be there can trigger a bit more of an inflammatory response. But again, I'm not an expert on that, but I know there is a lot more research coming out, and I'm certainly hearing a lot more about it when people are talking about inflammation as well.
So I'm maybe not the best candidate to be like throwing petrol on the fire. Being inflamed generally, I'm not even really sure what that means. So that's like when you test the glycans, those are proteins that will bind themselves to cells, or they're sugar proteins. Like what are they?
So you've got your immune system. So your immune system, when it should be switched on, does a really good job at, you know, coming alive, attacking what needs to be attacked, then going back to sleep again. Chronic inflammation is when it doesn't get turned off. So the immune system's attacking, thinking that there's something going on when really there's not. So you've got all these immune cells that are looking to attack something, but there's nothing there to attack.
That is very me.
Now, what we are measuring are glycans. So if we were to look on the surface of your immune cells, you'd see lots of little sugar chains. And literally, you have different patterns of these sugar chains or these glycans, depending on the level of inflammation you have. So somebody that's highly inflamed will have a different pattern to people that are low levels of inflammation. And just generally, as you get older, you get higher inflammation. So you'll have a pattern that looks like higher inflammation. So when we say, you know, your biological age is 77, typically that is what that pattern that you have is what we would see in somebody much older.
Okay. So my autoimmune disease is potentially making my glycan pattern mimic the glycan.
Exactly that. It's keeping it switched on. So it would look typically like something we would see in an older person who just has chronic low-grade inflammation, inflammation that's just never quite switched off. It's always sort of small. We say it's smoldering.
Okay, Nicholas. So normal, we'll call them normal, even though that's a triggering word for people nowadays, but typical, no, still triggering. Women who come on this podcast and they are experiencing symptoms of perimenopause, or they're getting to the age, or they have already been through menopause, with regards to lowering their glycolic age, you tell them HRT, estrogen. Estrogen lowers inflammation. Estrogen's good. But for me, Dr. Chris, you're saying we don't know. We don't really know what's going on at all. Because maybe 90% of lupus sufferers are women, and there's no funding and research for women because we only just started classifying them as people like 10 minutes ago. estrogen, maybe, we don't really know, is linked to lupus. So menopause will be sweet relief for you when you don't have estrogen anymore. So Nicola, we're telling these ladies you want estrogen, but it seems like you're telling me just wait till you don't have any estrogen. Like I'm going to let that happen. I'll be on the HRT. I will have an estrogen. I'm not even sick now with estrogen. I feel more confused about estrogen than ever.
So I think there is something to be said about that. And you really hit the nail on the head in terms of there's not really been much research.
No.
We're a small area looking after people with lupus. And we are trying to learn more, but there's still a lot that needs to be done. And I think that many people are almost in kind of a defensive mode a lot of the time. So
did that come across as defensive?
No. I mean doctors.
Okay.
No. Looking at myself here. So I think that a lot of us are defensive, where you kind of say, well, if we think estrogen makes it worse, then let's just avoid estrogen. And I think there are these conversations where people say, well, what about HRT? And the easy response is to be defensive and say, well, we know that estrogen probably is bad, so don't do that. But we forget that they're actually really debilitating symptoms for women to go through. And we do need to have a bit of a change in mindset where we don't just kind of say, no, all estrogen is bad.
And everyone's an individual, and we've got to not forget that. And, you know, highlighting with lupus how different everyone is, how different the symptoms are. So, you know, one person may benefit from hormone replacement, one person might absolutely not. And I just think it's great that we're sat here today having the conversation about something that isn't understood, but really can impact people's lives, and, you know, just bringing the awareness to it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kamala. Chris, what is the lifespan for someone who has like active debilitating lupus, would you say?
So when we think about kind of severe lupus, we think about people who get kidney disease from their lupus. And we know that about half of people are at risk of that. And usually it's within the first few years of their diagnosis.
Well, that's good for me.
Yes. You're totally right. You've kind of moved to this area where that risk is now much, much lower. And so if you get kidney disease, and bear in mind that one in two people with lupus will get kidney disease at some point.
One in two people with lupus will get kidney disease at some point.
Yeah, so half of the people, and you can't tell that when you see someone. So we kind of think we're doing a good job where we see someone, we go, you got a diagnosis of lupus. I know what you've got this condition. And then they'll say, well, what does the future look like for me? And then I'll talk very broadly and say, well, there's a 50% chance you might get kidney disease. And
you say that to their face.
Well, yeah, I mean, they want to know what the risk is in the future.
The first appointment, you say that.
But then the question after that is, well, am I in that 50%? And then I just have to shrug my shoulders and go, don't know. And so you kind of keep a real close eye on people, when actually, if you had a test that says things are going to be fine, things will be mild and you'll be okay, and I only need to see you once a year, great. That would be really helpful for that patient and the doctor as well. Similarly, if you knew that someone was really high risk, you'd see them really frequently and make sure you catch things early, because if you don't catch the kidney trouble very early, then that causes damage to the kidneys.
Yeah.
And we're talking about young people. So if you damage your kidneys and your kidneys don't work at a young age, you've then got to have those kidneys right the way through your life.
You get new ones.
You can,
from a prisoner.
I've never given it from a prisoner.
Okay.
Usually from a relative, but you know, your relative could be a prisoner, and that I'm sure would be allowed.
I'm friends with rich people, and they just get organs from prisoners.
Ah, okay.
So because I was diagnosed almost 20 years ago, it's probably unlikely that I'll get kidney disease.
Yeah.
And then, well, so how long do those people live?
So it varies. So a lot of it is how bad the lupus is. That's kind of the first thing. So if you've got really severe lupus at the start and that causes lots of damage, then you've got to live the rest of your life with that damage.
Yeah.
But then also, if you're really sick, a lot of the medicines we give side effects. So a lot of the strong medicines for treating lupus are very, very immunosuppressant. So in an attempt
steroids.
To make someone better, yeah, in an attempt to make someone better, you're increasing the risks of side effects. And you mentioned steroids. If you use steroids for a long time, you're at risk of diabetes and heart disease and thin bones and all these things.
Chris, listen to me. I took 25 milligrams a day of prednisolone in my pregnancy with Fred to modulate my immune system so that he would survive.
Yep.
Was he worth it? The jury's out. I gained 4 stone all in my neck, and I only had to take those steroids for 3 months, and I cannot imagine on being like that dose for life? Or do you people on that dose?
Not usually that dose these days. Okay. Now we've got better treatments, but the other treatments also suppress the immune system. So people are at risk of infections. So you're really trying to get that sweet spot of you've got someone better and they're on a medicine that works for them and they're not getting side effects. But that's still really difficult.
What are the other medicines? So I take baby aspirin and hydroxychloroquine every day. I take 400 milligrams of hydroxychloroquine, which is an anti-malarial drug.
Yeah.
Why does that help lupus?
Again, I think it comes back to what I said at the start. There's a lot that we don't know. And this was all a complete accident.
You're very mysterious.
I know. I mean, I've never been called mysterious. I thought it was just not expert. But
you're mysterious. You need to rebrand yourself.
Fine, I'll use that. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe so, consider a cloak rather than a white coat.
Yeah. We're not allowed white coats these days, though. They're hygiene risk. Cloak might be allowed, though.
A cloak.
I'll have to check.
Like from the traders.
Yeah. Okay. It might be a bit long.
So I take anti-malarial drugs. We don't know why.
They just seem to work, seems to be the... So essentially, the data came from they're anti-malarial, so they gave it to loads of people when they go into malarial areas. And then they felt better.
Okay.
And so we used it more and more frequently. And we know that actually, if you've got lupus and you're on hydroxychloroquine, you tend to live longer than if you're not on hydroxychloroquine. You tend to have less heart trouble. You tend to have less flares of the lupus, all for a drug that's relatively mild. And we don't really know how it works, just that it does.
And it sometimes causes blindness.
Yeah. So the risk of hydroxychloroquine is damage to the back of the eyes, which can be irreversible.
Great.
That usually happens if you've been on the drug for a long time.
Like 20 years?
Yeah. So it's the risk is low. We're talking about perhaps between 1 in 500, 1 in 1,000 people, but that's still not zero. So we ask people to get their eyes checked once a year while still on the medicine. If there is any sign at all of any early changes, even if the person's vision is still fine, then we usually look to stop it.
And have you had pregnant patients with lupus?
Yeah. So not so many years ago, people with lupus used to be told they shouldn't get pregnant. That's thankfully not the case now. When people do get pregnant, we want to make sure they're on good, safe medicines, i.e. medicines that are not dangerous to the baby, and that the lupus is generally fairly well controlled before someone tries to get pregnant. Because if your lupus is active when you go to get pregnant, you don't want major complications during pregnancy when you've got a baby on board. And you mentioned high doses of steroids and things like that. You wouldn't want to be on that all the way through the pregnancy.
No.
But I think when women come to clinic and say they'd like to get pregnant, you know, there are things we can do to make sure it's done as safely as possible with lots of regular monitoring. Sometimes we don't have kind of the foresight and people will be diagnosed with lupus during pregnancy. So I have had people come from the scan of their baby where they've said the heart looks abnormal and they've got no symptoms of lupus. And then we've done the blood test and we found those antibodies. And actually, it's just been found when they had the scan of the baby. So it's very tricky to get the diagnosis. And some people do get diagnosed during pregnancy. And if people do want to get pregnant with lupus, that's fine. We just need to know about it. And we encourage people to discuss it with us good and early so we can make sure everything is fine.
Well, much better to be diagnosed with an autoimmune disease via the glycan age test than via a fetal cardiologist. Yeah. Damn. Nicola, Chris, here's something that I've thought, and I could be wrong. This is just me spitballing, but it sounds like I'm as informed as any specialist. My inflammation is high. Mm-hmm. That's bad for my biological age. My immune system is very active. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it's been betrayed before and it doesn't trust men. Could that be a good thing? Because even though my immune system is attacking healthy cells and organs, not ideal, is my immune system also hypervigilant about bugs? Like, won't I live forever? Because my immune system's like, hey, cancer, oi, you know, diabetes, and I've never had malaria. So is it maybe a superpower in a way? Is that a thing?
No.
Oh.
With lupus, your immune system has got distracted.
Oh.
So it's maybe overly active.
No,
but it's going after the wrong thing, which means that actually it's not doing the right thing. So bugs can sneak in the background. And if the immune system is attacking your skin or your joints or elsewhere in your body, it's less likely to pick that up. So we do know that just having an autoimmune condition, that particularly if it's active, increases your risk of infection regardless of treatment.
But I'm never sick, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm impervious to pain and stress, I feel. But maybe I should look into if I have some deep-seated trauma from something that I just forget. Because that would be very me, just to forget it and then be riddled with autoimmune disease.
But it's also good to forget it.
Is it, Chris?
Possibly.
That's very British of you.
I mean, my best friend's a psychiatrist, so I'd have to ask him. But I think, you know, if it's not affecting you, you may not want to revisit that if the stress is going to...
I don't think it's affecting me, but I'm on 400 milligrams of hydroxychloroquine, which you don't know why I'm on, and it might make me blind.
I mean, we do know why you're on it. It's because it's a good treatment to keep you well. And it might be the thing that's keeping you well, but we don't know exactly why it's keeping you well.
All right.
And the risk of blindness is very low.
Well, I will say I've had melanoma twice, and my inflammatory response has led to self-diagnosis both those times, because I haven't just had strange moles. Mm. I've had moles that have become like really inflamed. Mm-hmm. And I sort of credit lupus for that and my high inflammation, my 77-year-old high inflammation. Do you think? Is that a thing?
Well, I think it's...
Did I get melanoma in the first place because my immune system was distracted?
So possibly the role of the immune system in preventing cancers is kind of, we're learning more and more. Melanoma is not particularly one that we see in lupus all that commonly, mainly because of the role of sunlight in development of melanoma. We often try and tell people to avoid that if they've got lupus, because it can make the skin worse. But it's a really important point that you mentioned in terms of, you know, advocating for yourself to kind of say, I think there's something wrong here. And this is sadly something we see a lot with lupus as well, that many people know there's something wrong with them for a very long time. But the time to actually get a diagnosis in the UK is still way longer than it should be. So on average, it's suggested that people with lupus live with symptoms for about 7 years before they get a diagnosis. And that's why, you know, it's really great to be able to hear to talk about this so that people can be more aware. And I think, you know, doctors should definitely know more. I'm biased. I would say that. That's what I spend all of my day doing. But I think also if people have symptoms and listen to things and go, maybe that's what I've got, then prompting their doctor to make a diagnosis or think about referring them to a rheumatologist is also really important.
And how many people in the UK do you think have lupus?
My maths is not good, but the UK stats suggest about 1 in 1,000 people.
Mm. And what are the symptoms, like the traditional symptoms?
So they can be really, really diffuse, but we know that the first symptom in majority of people is skin. And so that could be rashes or mouth ulcers and hair loss. And if the hair loss becomes really bad, that causes alopecia. So people have bald spots. When you get to that point, usually someone thinks there's something wrong and will refer you to hospital. The other symptoms can be very general. So this fatigue and generalized pain and things like that. When people get sicker, they have fevers and sometimes they have severe amounts of weight loss that's unintentional. Mm-hmm. And then it depends on other symptoms. So, for example, people can develop inflammation in their joints. So painful, swollen joints and things that then become really very obvious that their doctor then can look at and say, OK, I think you've got the diagnosis. But that's usually on a background of someone going, I've got really bad mouth ulcers. I got this horrible rash after I went in the sun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been suffering from pain for several years. And then it's a big thing that brings them into a doctor. So it presents in lots of different ways, but those are the symptoms really to look out for.
And your GP can refer you to a rheumatologist, hopefully.
Yep.
Do the tests. And you can read Chris Wincup's interviews and things. I've read all about you.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that I talk about lupus a lot because it is one of those conditions that gets missed a lot, sadly. Mm-hmm. And people will often be told they've got various other things. And in worst case scenario, some people are told it's all in your head, which, you know, is not true. And then suddenly we sit there and say, oh, we know exactly what you've got. And we think that people will think you've done a good job. You know what my problem is. But actually, you're on a background of the person being told 3 or 4 times before we know what you've got. And it's been wrong. So it is really, really very tricky, very challenging. And as a rheumatologist, my job's really easy because I always think about lupus. It's about getting other people to think about it so that more people can come to us and we can get the diagnosis much earlier.
Good. Yeah, I was originally diagnosed with ringworm on my face, but it was the discoid rash.
Yep. I've seen that before as well.
That was great. And leprosy. I thought, leprosy. Okay.
That's very rare.
Yep. Well, I wasn't diagnosed with leprosy. It was just like a suggested to me by a guy on a bench.
Okay.
Nicola, am I going to die? Is there anything positive from the data that you collected?
The positive is, as I always say, that it's reversible, and knowing something about it means you can do something about it.
It's not reversible. I have a chronic illness. Mm. I'm not going to be doing any yoga with you and your little northern friends. I think that I appreciate you always try to give some actionable advice.
Yeah.
But I lean into being 77. I thought it was going to be older, to be honest with you, with the few weeks and months that I'd had leading up to the test.
I mean,
what would you do if you were me?
Honestly, Catherine.
Oh, I already know. You'd exercise.
Whatever makes you happy. Because happiness is very good for longevity.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been doing well. I did well in my questionnaire. We've had crackheads in here who are 20. Great. Well, I'm going to ask my closing questions to myself now. Thank you both so much for being here, by the way. You know, like I do have some medical mistrust.
That's why I'm on this side, right?
No, but I really like you, Dr. Chris. I appreciate that you've dedicated your life to helping people like me. And you know the trauma that we've come from, being told it's all in our head.
Totally.
Yada, yada. We don't know why we put you on anti-malarial medicine. You might go blind. We don't know. Will the test change how I live? No. What does 77-year-old Catherine's life look like? Awesome. I hope to live to be very old. Mm. Yeah. And maybe my husband will go wandering. And then I'll just be able to like go to West End shows by myself, and I'll be very eccentric by then, and I'll have a lot of dogs and surgeries in this country. Do you think plastic surgery, not like implants and things, but could I get a facelift with lupus?
It's a tricky one. It's very kind of you to ask, because many people will kind of come in and go, surprise, I've had surgery.
Yeah.
And most of them are actually fine.
And they look the most surprised.
The one thing that I would say is, if you've got lupus affecting your skin and your skin is inflamed, probably best not to have surgery or a tattoo at that time.
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, just, you know, putting it out there for the audience. Tattoos are trendy. Lots of people get tattoos. But if you've got inflamed skin and you're getting a tattoo, you're asking, I think, for trouble.
Yeah.
If not, again, it's much like we're talking about with kind of the perimenopause symptoms. The easy thing for me to do is say, no, don't do that.
Mm.
But there's probably no real great evidence to suggest why that would be unsafe. But disclosure, talk to your doctor before you do it.
Yeah. Okay. And I think the best thing about getting older is, well, I've reached a place of authenticity already, but I do see it as a gift. My grandmother, I think, had undiagnosed lupus. Mm. She had fibromyalgia. She ate really terribly. She had a lot of stress. Like, her life was very different to mine. She had a philandering husband who drank a 40 of Crown Royal every night. Hashtag spawn. And, you know, she died very young. She died at 63. She had breast cancer, but that's not what killed her. The staples from the surgery caused inflammation. She was allergic to metals. She had all these undiagnosed autoimmune diseases. And then she eventually died from a bowel perforation, which, again, I think she had all that stuff. So I feel very lucky to have access to science, both of you, rheumatology. And I think that hopefully if I remain stress-free, 77 is the age I should always be. Like, I give 77. I think I'd be disappointed. I was like, Catherine, you're 20. What? So I have to go back to the Playboy Mansion and like start dating all of those kind of guys again and making those mistakes. No, 77 really suits me. So, you know, I think we've shined a light a little bit on autoimmune disease, though not very much from your side. I think your test is biased against us.
It is. Mm. It is always going to be biased. It's inflammation. We know inflammation's high. I really want to do some other types of tests with you, though. But then you might have to be younger, and then you don't want to be younger. So.
But, you know, that's true. I could be worse, actually. I think, again, now I'm pissed off, and I'll be 89. I think I could get it up. I'm the first guest. My goal is to get it up. I'm going to come back. No exercise. I'm going to get myself a mobility scooter, and I'm going to get that age sky high.
Oh, Catherine.
2026 goals.
Thanks to Chris Wincup from King's College Hospital in London and our resident scientist, Nicola Conlan. I'm Catherine Ryan, and I'm 77. Thank you for listening to What's My Age Again. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out our socials pages too. Even though I'm 77, I don't know what those are.